This episode is sponsored by Anchor by Spotify. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast, and Ashley and I can definitely personally vouch for this. First of all, it saves you a bunch of time, so we don't really talk about this, but Ashley and I both have full-time jobs, and we don't really live close by each other, so we just get together once a week, every week, and talk about our podcast, and Anchor.fm helps us a lot to get everything out there and ready to go for you all to listen to with not a lot of time needed. So first of all, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many more. There are also creation tools right in Anchor that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or from your computer.
Also, Anchor is free, and even though you don't have to pay any money, it actually allows you to make money from your own podcast even without a minimum number of listeners. It's everything you could possibly need to make a podcast for free in one place.
So if you can't already tell, we both love Anchor. And if you're interested in starting a podcast of your own, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Hi, listeners, and welcome to Above the Wing, a podcast to bring together all aspects of the aviation community, including engineers, journalists, mechanics, pilots, and even casual hobbyists. I'm your co-host, Kim.
And I'm your co-host, Ashley. We'll talk about all things aviation, from current events to new products and airplanes to industry trends and everything in between. Looking at our first in the news article this week, American Airlines is introducing their new flagship suite seats. Flagship suite seats are featuring private doors and will be included on all Airbus A321XLR and Boeing 787-9 deliveries beginning in the year 2024. American will refresh its Boeing 777-300ER fleet with the new luxurious interior, which will elevate the in-flight customer experience on their longer-haul international routes. Premium seating in America's long-haul fleet will grow more than 45% by year 2026, a couple years later. From thoughtfully redesigned lounges to the stylish aircraft interior and enhanced in-flight service, customers will have access to true premium experience from American Airlines.
Moving on to our next headline, Rolls-Royce obtains EASA approval for their Pearl 700 engine. Rolls-Royce has officially secured European certification for the Pearl 700 engine, which powers the Gulfstream G700 and G800 executive jets. This engine is a sole power plant for the G700 and G800 and features Rolls-Royce's Advanced 2 Core, which is a new low-pressure system. The Pearl 700 test programs include demonstration of performance with both conventional and full sustainable fuel. Rolls-Royce Business Aviation Director Dirk Geisinger says that the European Union Aviation Safety Industry certification reinforces the company's capabilities to design and build quote-unquote pioneering engines.
Our next headline, the Atchison Amelia Earhart Foundation will be hosting a public ceremony to unveil a bronze statue of Amelia Earhart. It'll be identical to the statue recently installed at the U.S. Capitol, and the Atchison Foundation statue will be opened on Saturday, September 24th. The ceremony will be held in front of the Amelia Earhart Hangar Museum, which is in Atchison, Kansas, Earhart's hometown. Karen Seberg, founder and president of the Atchison Amelia Earhart Foundation, said, quote, "Although it was a historic milestone to bring Amelia Earhart to the U.S. Capitol in July, we're especially thrilled to finally unveil this twin bronze statue of Amelia in her beloved Atchison, Kansas hometown."
Moving on to our last headline, a fatal accident suspends the 2022 Reno Air Races. On Sunday, September 18th, Reno Air Races suspended all operations following a fatal accident during the Jet Gold Race. An Aero L-29 Delphin crashed behind a residential area. Prior to this accident, the 2022 Reno Air Races were already under uncertainty due to concern over lack of visibility caused by smoke from wildfires. Now moving on to the bulk of our episode. So today we're going to take a look back into history because recently I learned that the Wright brothers were not undisputably the first in flight. Alex and Pat, if you're listening, thanks for not only letting me know about this, but also suggesting this as a potential podcast episode. So we did a little digging about who the controversies were about and who the other potential inventors were. So today we'll give you a little bit of background on one person that we found, and as well as the Wright brothers, and we'll give our thoughts about who we think was actually first in flight. So I'll start with Alberto Santos Dumont. He was born on July 20th, 1873, and passed away on July 23rd, 1932. So to give some premise to Alberto, I thought it would only be fitting to talk about his childhood and how he started to become interested in aviation. He was an heir of a wealthy family of coffee producers, and he was born in Brazil. And he worked on the family's farm. He got exposure to machinery and things like that. And he had a really interesting quote that I found too. He said, "Since childhood, I had a great love for mechanical things. And like all those who have or think they have a vocation, I cultivated mine with care and passion. I always played at imagining and building little mechanical devices which entertained me and earned me high regard in my family. My greatest joy was taking care of my father's mechanical installations. That was my department, which made me very proud." So I feel like this illustrates his inventor spirit, if you could call it that. I really liked this. It gave kind of like a peek into who he was as a person and how much he loved tinkering. And as a fellow engineer, this really like spoke to me. Mm-hmm. I really found this in common. And I think it's funny because my great love for mechanical things started with Legos, which is a lot more simple than large machines on a farm. But, you know, that's besides the point. So I figured I'd share that quote to you to kind of give some insight into his personality. And in 1891, his family took a trip to Paris, and that's where he developed a formal interest in mechanics, especially the internal combustion engine. So as he grew older, he continued to study mechanics, chemistry, and electricity. All three of those are very important in aircrafts today. At the age of 24, he moved to France, and he hired professional aeronauts to teach him ballooning. By July 4th, 1898, he flew the Brazil, which is a balloon that he built himself. It was inflated with hydrogen, 6 meters in diameter, and made more than 200 flights. So that was the start of his interest in being airborne, because, you know, this wasn't really exactly a flight, I guess you could say, a conventional aircraft flight.
I know, that's such a unique way to like get into it.
Yeah. And I liked reading about it too, because you could clearly see like the progression of his interest. Mm-hmm. You know, he started learning about it just like in his environment that he grew up in. And then he went on a trip to some faraway place. In this case, it was Paris, and saw some cool stuff. And he was like, oh, maybe I'll learn more about this. And then he like got more formal education, moved formally to France to get this formal education, and even like, you know, learn from the professionals to learn how to do this kind of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty really cool. Yeah, it is. It's an interesting journey.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people today who go into the aerospace field, like follow similar like paths. Like for you, you grew up with your dad being around aviation, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, by June 1902, Santos Dumont published an article saying that he believed hydrogen gas was not sufficient enough to propel an airship to take off, and engine power was needed. So this is key, because he had taken interest in the internal combustion engine at a very early age. And I think this all like lends itself together, like the progression to his final invention makes sense. In October 23rd, 1906, he flew his 14 Bys biplane a distance of 60 meters or 197 feet at a height of no more than 5 meters or 15 feet. For this flight, Santos Dumont won the prize for the first officially observed flight of more than 25 meters in Europe, though, in Europe. Mm-hmm. In November 12, 1906, he flew his 14 Bys biplane for 22.2 seconds for a distance of 220 meters or 722 feet. And this, again, was the first ever flight in Europe of more than 100 meters. And after learning about all these flights, I was like, what on earth did this thing look like? It looks like a rectangular air balloon, hot air balloon. So it has like this structure. Instead of a circular structure, it's like a box with silk stretched over it. And upon reading more into it, it's silk stretched over bamboo framework. So it kind of looks like It looks like wings, kind of. And then it obviously has like the main fuselage, and it's powered by a 40 horsepower engine, and it has biplane wings. So it's kind of funky looking.
That's interesting that you say that it looks like a balloon because of like his experience in ballooning.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
I like seeing how he used all of his past experiences.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like this guy was made to do this, like making an airplane was fate.
But it's cool. It's almost like he used like what he was familiar with, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. That's cool. And that was interesting to read about. And he used an engine, which, you know, was needed on their coffee farm, I'm sure.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, that's a great point.
So somehow he cultivated all these different interests to get to an airplane, which I thought was very interesting.
Very cool.
So what did you find out about the Wright brothers?
Yeah, so I think a lot of us know sort of the traditional story of the Wright brothers. I think we can all picture that, you know, that iconic image that circulates around that was taken of their first flight. But to give a little context, you know, on the morning of, the day was December 17th, 1903, so a couple of years before, Orville Wright took controls of him and his brother's aircraft, and he signaled to Wilbur that he was ready to go. Wilbur ran alongside him and had to actually balance the aircraft. As their aircraft was called the Wright Flyer, it slid down a rail that they had set up, and then it soared into the air for a distance of 120 feet for 12 seconds at 6.8 miles per hour. They did a total of 4 flights that day, so the next two covered, they increased to 175 and then 200 feet. And both brothers got an opportunity to do some flying. And then they had a fourth flight, and I was actually able to find like their notes that they had written about the fourth flight that Orville wrote. So I can read part of it. Orville wrote, "Wilbur started the fourth and last flight at just about 12 o'clock. The first few hundred feet were up and down as before, but the time 300 feet had been covered, the machine was much under better control." So it's sort of interesting. They actually progressed all the way up to 300 feet just in that first day. He said that at about 800 feet, so even further, the machine began pitching again, and in one of its starts downward, struck into the ground. So they were able to reach a total of 852 feet for 59 seconds, so almost a whole minute. But the frame supporting the front rudder was badly broken, wrote Orville. And the main part of the machine, though, was not injured at all. They were estimating and hoping that the machine could be put back into condition for flight again in just another day or two. So that just sort of goes to show you how dedicated these guys were to keep going at it after a little bump in the road. There's also this narrative that they were, you know, also the title of inventing the first successful airplane. So not just the flight, but also inventing the airplane itself as the first successful. So historians consider that because it was heavier than air, manned and powered, and it was able to take off and land under its own power. And it was controllable along three axes in order to avoid crashes. They also were able to develop the equations for lift and drag, and they used these equations to answer the question, is there enough power in the engine to produce a thrust adequate to overcome the drag of the total frame? So that's sort of cool, that there was like all of these, you know, obviously equations behind the whole thing. They continued to document their experiments, sort of like how I read out before, and they actually pursued patents and contracts for their Wright flyers. They developed flying machines continuously, so there later became a Wright Flyer II, and then the first truly practical fixed-wing aircraft, their Wright Flyer III, and their three-axis control system is still standard today in pretty much all fixed wing aircraft. So sort of the technology there lives on. By 1905, a couple years down the line, they were taking flights as long as 40 minutes. So it really didn't take them long to increase their flight time. So these guys were dedicated and they were moving quick, you know, progression wise. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, agreed. I like hearing about how different the flights were.
Yeah.
But I feel like the differences aid to the controversy.
Right.
So there's a lot of disputes about who was really the first in flight.
Yeah.
And even in your account of how the Wrights actually got into the air, mm-hmm. You said they slid down a rail. But then historians right. say that they believe that the Wright brothers were first because it was manned and powered and able to take off and land under its own power.
Right.
So upon looking online and digging deeper more into this controversy, I found that there's a lot of conflicting claims about who actually had the first unassisted flight.
Right.
So for example, people are saying that, if it was like a true flight and not just like a jump, right, mm-hmm. then Santos Dumont and others should be considered the first in flight.
Right.
Because his plane or air balloon plane, I don't really know what to call it.
yeah.
Was unassisted. They right. didn't need a catapult or rails or anything, to take off. Like mm-hmm. you said that, Orville took controls of the aircraft and Wilbur was the one who kind of ran alongside it.
Right. Yeah.
So that's some assistance there, but other people think that like strong winds or something at Kitty Hawk like sure. helped the flight and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it didn't really lift off on its own between the rails and the running and the winds. Like it wasn't yeah. really unassisted, right?
Right, right.
But at the same time,
it's tough to say.
Yeah. But at the same time, it was a heavier than air airplane. It flew. So I don't right. know.
I think too, like I know, you know, I was saying how they like pursued patents and stuff, and I think that definitely helped their case a lot. Like they were, you know, not only eager and just like getting it for themselves, but I think also definitely wanted to slap their name on a lot right. of things. And were eager in, you know, pursuing that, and clearly had like the means to do so.
Right.
So I wonder like how much that sort of like sways at all.
yeah. But at the same time, since they were so secret about their developments and their inventions
right.
because they wanted a patent, it wasn't publicly observed.
That's but yeah.
Alberto's right. flight was publicly yeah. observed and like yeah. it was basically certified by the predecessor to right. EASA at the time. They're like, oh, you flew and you'll get this prize or whatever. Or like yeah. we formally recognize you as the first ever flight in Europe of more than 100 meters.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
Unfortunately, I feel like I don't have a strong opinion on this.
I know. But who was first? I guess it's just sort of what you consider. Like, I guess there's nothing wrong with, like, getting a little assistance. You know? yeah. Like, think about a glider, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, you need a pole plane to get a glider up.
Yeah.
And that's still flying.
I agree with you. That's still a plane.
Yeah, right. So I don't know. I guess it all depends how you look at it.
I also feel like different each person who is involved in this first in flight controversy had different mm-hmm. contributions to aerospace today,
yeah.
aviation today. Like you said that the Wright brothers developed the lift and drag equations.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, Santos Dumont strongly believed that aircrafts needed an engine.
Right. Yeah.
Like an internal combustion engine. So, mm-hmm. I mean, without those two together, you can't yeah. have the planes that we have today, right?
Yeah. I think it's also really telling, really just of both of them, you know, considering the time period that this was going on, like we're talking before 1905 for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
They likely had no idea what the other was doing.
No idea.
So, like the fact that they both were like they both independently did this without having any knowledge that the other guy was doing it. So either way, it's obviously impressive on both accounts.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. That's an interesting point. That
yeah,
I think how many? They were at least like three or four other people who were developing some type of aircraft or aeroplanes, as they call it at the time. I wonder what caused all these separate people in different places to want to do this.
Yeah, like all of a sudden.
I know. I mean, at that point, the automobile industry was probably relatively well established.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably set their sights on something more.
Yeah, like what's next?
Yeah. But I can't imagine what it's like to be in that era and be like, I'm gonna fly.
I know. Like I think about today, like what's even the equivalent?
I don't know.
You know? Yeah, like just such a wild thing to set your sets on. But that's like doable.
Right. I mean, at the time, I doubt they knew that it was doable. Like, I kind of wish these people were alive today to see what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, there are people who are just getting their pilot's license as a hobby.
Yeah, right. You take Alberto Santos, for example, who lived until 1932. And it must have been really interesting for him to see, like, how this technology that he, you know, pioneered turned out to be. So in the 30s, you know, airplanes were just used in the war, and commercial travel was just starting to begin. And it's really interesting to read about commercial air travel at that time. So, you know, for example, airplanes would get to just about 13,000 feet and about 200 miles an hour, but you know, there wasn't like cabin communication like we're used to today and stuff like that. So they would regularly drop, you know, hundreds of feet in the air with no warning, and just, it wasn't for, you know, the faint of heart flying at this time. The Smithsonian reports that in the year 1930, only 6,000 people traveled via a commercial airline of sorts, if you will. So
a decent amount of people still, though. 6,000 people.
It is, yeah.
Knowing that the plane might drop randomly.
Yeah, right. 6,000 people were brave enough knowing that is what it would be like. So, but still, I bet it was pretty interesting to see, like, this is how, you know, like, to in your lifetime see, like, what you, you know, played a hand in, like, blossom into.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. And just for context, aircraft today, their cruising altitude is between 31,000 and 38,000 feet.
Yeah.
So that's almost three times as high as 13,000 feet in 1932.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
So things have changed a lot. And I feel like 1932 was not that long ago, considering how much aerospace has changed and aviation has changed.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Like, we went from the Santos Dumont aircraft, which literally looked like like a box with silk on it, like stretched over it. Or like the Wright brothers, the Wright Flyer that was just like, it looked like a glider, basically.
Yeah, it did.
And now we have these huge, like, Boeing 737s making international flights on the regular.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, the 30s really weren't all that long ago, all considering.
Yeah. I think it's pretty cool.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
I also think it's interesting that Alberto Santos Dumont was in France at the time.
Right.
And now Airbus is like the French aircraft manufacturer, right?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So I wonder if that interest in aviation had, like, since it stemmed from such an early era, I wonder if that's what carried through.
Yeah.
To Airbus today. And Rolls-Royce is European based as well. Mm-hmm. Like, in our new segment, we talked about how they got their EASA approval for one of their engines.
Well, that's really interesting. Yeah, that's a good point.
I wonder if there's a way to trace all that back, right?
Yeah, like the roots of Airbus.
Yeah.
Like where, you know, the founders or whoever drew inspiration from.
Yeah. I mean, they're big companies and they've been around for a while.
Yeah.
So they've got to have, like, a history book or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's got to be a pretty cool story to tell.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we have for this week's episode. Thanks for listening. And if you want more Above the Wing content, feel free to follow us on Instagram at abovethewing.podcast and on TikTok at abovethewingpod.
Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.